Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill. And sitting in this week for Ryan Kiesel is former lawmaker and political consultant Sid Hudson. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
The State Department of Education and Superintendent Janet Barisi found themselves in damage control mode after last week's outage of testing for Oklahoma students. Sid, you're the new guy here. We'll start with you. What were your thoughts when you heard about this?
Well, it's... I wish I had coined this, but a friend of mine told me back during the No Child Left Behind time that education had become No Vendor Left Behind. And so we have had all these vendors get involved in so many parts of education and the rest to do all the testing. It's really no surprise. It failed last year, and they haven't completely fixed the technology this year. And so, you fool me once, fool me twice.
Neva, you do represent Superintendent Barisi, but what were your thoughts about what was going on there?
Well, first of all, I mean, Sid's right. There have been problems, and there's no excuse. I think everyone recognizes that that these are issues that have to be corrected. But I think the bigger, kind of the overriding thing that I always look at in this discussion is that we need to drive it by policy, not politics. And I think we've embroiled this unfortunate incident back into the political campaign. But Sid's right. I mean, not only is it this year and last year, but it's over the past decade. We've had five testing companies that have had issues and problems in Oklahoma. So it's an ongoing situation that does need to be remedied. And frankly, I think no one at the State Department of Education would dispute that. I mean, it's about being able to provide the test in a manner that gets the results and provides the information that is good for everyone involved.
The governor is getting Senate Bill 1246 to drop the income tax to 5% and then 4.85% when passed out of the House. Admittedly, I was caught off guard watching this bill in the Senate, which drops the personal and corporate tax. And then all of a sudden this one goes on to the governor. Neva, this bill didn't go through any sort of conference committee or budget planning. Do you think the governor will sign it?
I think probably so. I mean, I think it's clear that the governor has sought income tax cuts throughout her first term. They were thwarted by the Republican majorities at the time, and it's been an ongoing back and forth of, you know, do we cut taxes and how, and the trade-offs with education and all these other issues that are kind of colliding here at the end of the session. But I think the bottom line is I always go back to what's good for the taxpayers, and the taxpayers want to see more money in their pocket. So I think it's a good thing.
Sid, do you agree with that?
Well, no. I think that the governor will sign it. I think it's election year politics. Here we sit possibly with the revenue failure for this current fiscal year. It's a very popular thing to do to cut taxes. It's not very popular to do the long-term investments that you need to make in education, healthcare, other things. But this is, I think, pretty much an election year. And it's one of the bad things, or in my opinion, is the fact that that the Republican majority has chosen to rule under this rule of the majority of the majority decides. And so what that means, with so few Democrats in the legislature, that everything is being driven by Republican primary politics, and most sitting Republicans are only afraid of someone attacking them from their right. And so consequently, pretty much most policy decisions have moved farther and farther to the right.
I think, you know, one of the things when we talk about these tax cuts, we're talking about 5.25% to 4.85%. It's in two stages. It's over time. I mean, we're not talking about somebody coming in and just sweeping across the landscape and saying we're just going to have all of these massive tax cuts. We're talking about deliberate ones with triggers in them, and I think that gets lost in some of this confusion when it gets back to the voters.
Yeah, I think we're going to we've kind of fallen in love with triggers over the last 10 or 15 years, and who knows what is going to be happening. We have kind of this crash happening of we have taxes going downward and costs going up, and there's also about not binding future legislatures, but there will be future legislatures, I think, are going to be in some very, very tight, tough fiscal situations.
Now, Senate Bill 2044, allowing for a bond to repair the Capitol, got defeated in the House 34-62. Sid, were you surprised by this?
I'm not surprised by anything at the Capitol anymore.
Spoken by one who knows.
It's really kind of boils down to this, you know, how do you want to do it? I was surprised they weren't able to line their votes up a little bit better. I think this was not a good thing for the speaker for it to lose. I must say I'm very sympathetic to those who say, why aren't we taking some of this money out of the rainy day fund? You know, $600 million in the rainy day fund, somebody needs to look outside, it's kind of pouring. And I think that, I am sympathetic to that view. And so it was really more about the source than whether we needed to do it. And that's kind of thwarted at this point.
Certainly something's falling around at the Capitol. Now, Neva, I do have to mention this. Speaker Hickman declared 2 weeks ago that he wouldn't put a bill on the floor unless it could get support from a majority of his party, as Sid alluded to, the majority of the majority.
Right.
He was talking about the American Indian Museum, but is there a bit of hypocrisy letting this Capitol repair bond move forward and come onto the floor, which obviously didn't get a majority of anybody, regardless of his own party?
Well, I think there's some. It's so fluid, and I think there is a question. You've got a divided Republican majority right now on these issues. You've got a unified Democratic minority. So it is kind of slip and slide. And I think what the speaker clearly is trying to do is forge a way to get to some resolution on both of these issues. I mean, he's made it clear that he would like to see a general obligation bond be able to move forward on the capital improvements, that it be on the November ballot. You know, others, you know, want to do something different. So the unfortunate part, but the political reality is they're going to tie all of these issues together, and it's going to come down to the last minute hardball negotiations, and they'll all be really with the backdrop of the appropriations process that is really this last 4 week sprint that we're going to see.
Now, there is still House Joint Resolution 1033 to send the bond issue to a vote of the people. It just passed out of the Senate on Thursday, and it apparently has that Senate Bill 2044 language in it. Do you see any possibility of this as it heads over to the House now?
Well, I mean, it's clearly alive, but barely alive, so I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting question to see whether it can make it all the way through.
A lot of people have said that if it goes to the vote of the people, they would more support it. Do you think that they might?
Oh, you know, maybe. But I think that there really is some very entrenched opposition to this method of funding it. And so I think they're going to have to resolve that with those folks.
And I think it might be different if we didn't have the Indian Cultural Museum Question Center in part of this equation, because clearly, I mean, there's differences of view on do we fix the Capitol versus do we add more money to finish that project. And they all get mixed in with more money for education, more money for trooper raises. I mean, all these things that kind of keep pushing to the front to get some resolution, they're not enough dollars. These guys have got to, men and women in the legislature have got to make tough decisions, and in election year, as we all know, they don't want to.
Well, let me ask you, is it politically dangerous for them not to do anything as it was with the Capitol right now?
Well, it will remain to be seen whether the voters think they're doing their job or not when they go back home to campaign.
And, you know, so few people even drew opposition. You can't say that there's this groundswell of people unhappy about anything. My guess is that the speaker probably prevails, gives somewhere else on this. Frankly, this situation with the Capitol building is an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to every Oklahoman. And the legislature, and that means everybody at the legislature, bears some responsibility for not getting this resolved. I don't even like to go in the building anymore. I know 25 years ago we had to spend money to try to keep some of the gargoyles from falling off, and I don't happen to want to be out there when it happens.
And I agree, Sid. I mean, I think it's unfortunate. I've said it for a long time now. It really is. It is the responsibility of the legislature to take the reins, to be the leaders in getting that fixed. And, you know, hammer through how you want to do it. Cash and carry, obligation bonds, whatever it happens to be. Come up with a method and then get behind it and get the job done.
Even 20 years ago, I mean, we know this is the top of tourism destination in the state, one of them. I was amazed as a member how many times I would run into people who are not from Oklahoma who had stopped in the Capitol and were doing a tour and, you know, would ask you questions or whatever, or were just kind of touring the Capitol. And it's like, where are you from? Well, I'm from Nevada, or I'm from here. And really, Governor Bellman deserves a lot of credit for this move back to really restoring the building and making the building much better. Other governors subsequently, obviously with Governor Keating and the Dome, have done big things. This building is too important. It's important to all Oklahomans.
Now, finally, House Bill 2642 to take money off the top of general revenue for education passed the Senate. Neva, this bill has gone through quite a few changes.
It has, and I think what we have is this great political pressure to do something where education funding is concerned, and so I think that it's unfortunate that they do it really with the backdrop of just the political elections looming. I mean, I think they've got to be more realistic in how they approach this, and frankly, just throwing money at it without a lot of without the real need to have some sort of ability to see what's happening with that money and whether we're getting the results. I mean, I think that's one of the big challenges between the House and the Senate, that debate that's gone on, is there needs to be the accountability factor, and just putting money into the pot is not getting the accountability.
Sid, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, as I said, you put money behind what you think is important. We don't really put very much money behind education in Oklahoma. I think this is a small step. It's been interesting to me that while Governor Bellman and the legislature passed a lot of reforms and a lot of really accountability issues through the 1017 stuff, in the last 20 years we've just one by one repealed all those pretty much, starting with class size, which is probably the most important. I think this is smoke and mirrors. It's not real support for education. The numbers are pretty clear where we are, and the numbers are pretty clear that the states that invest in education generally do better. I think that we've really assigned a lot of accountability in the last 15 years towards all this testing, and we spent over $13 million with one testing company. When you get really right down to assessment, portfolio assessment is the only thing that really, really, truly shows you what to do, and that cost even a lot more. So I don't think we place a very high value on education.
Thank you very much. Sid and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.